now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Oh yes, who's a sexy Chris Keeper?
Oh yes, maybe one day, Governor Chris Keeper. Oh yes, I would elect me. I would elect me hard. Oh yeah, baby. And the maid can't resist this. Oh baby! Oh, bad dog.
Hello folks, it's the Chris Keeper here. And I'm just gathering up a few art supplies. Right here I've got a stapler, and right here I have a bag of doggy fur, and right here I have a little fluffy tail, and I'm going to be creating my own little pet, but first I'm going to let my pet think about it while I watch Friday the 13th, part 2. Oh, come here, Chelsea.
Hello and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I'm Chris Honeywell. I am here with my three co-hosts. Chris Tyler, the hair metal hero.
Oh, my sweater is so comfortable.
Sean Engel, or better known as Joe Anthrax.
Hey, everyone.
And Luke Giaconetti, El Giacone.
Oh, I'm glad that hero's sweater is comfortable because I'm sitting here in my sweater and panties.
What?
Anyway, we are back with another Friday the 13th movie, the second Friday the 13th movie, often referred to as the greatest Friday the 13th movie of all time. I'm kidding. That's from my point of
that's
view.
That's number six.
No, wait a minute. You know what's funny is that you say that, and that's obviously satirical, you know. Yeah. But This was a lot better than I remember it being from the last time I watched it.
I wasn't bored. I wasn't wishing it was it would wrap it up or anything, you know.
Yeah, this one actually moved at a good clip. Compared to the first one, which it was, you know, was kind of setting up the
it was
the
a
thing.
Mystery. Really,
yeah, this one had had a lot more of the tropes that you expect with the Friday the 13th film, with the whole, you know, it's Jason and it's Camp Blood and here's what happened, and here's what happened to all these kids, and the stereotype of the girl going off swimming and all that. But yeah, this is a lot more of what we come to expect of the Friday the 13th movies than the first one gave us. So this was, rewatching this was a fun rewatch.
And let's keep count. This one still has camp counselors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's right. We're keeping a death count. I forgot to count how many people. Did you guys count?
Yes. I did.
Okay, good.
Seven that you actually see, but apparently somebody dies off screen, so it could be eight.
Okay, so that brings our total death count in Friday the 13th to 50.
Oh, wait, not counting, I think, the one at the beginning. So maybe nine.
The body count is
off the check.
What's given in
17.
In part three, they give the body count from this movie as eight. So, but yeah, you know, this was definitely, you know, Sean hit the nail on the head. This was definitely a move towards the formula. And you can see watching Friday the 13th Part 2, you can see, okay, I can see how this became a franchise that produced so many sequels for so many years. Because this formula, this can work. You can turn the crank on this. You can't do that with the original Friday the 13th.
No.
You can't have, you know, another middle-aged white woman go crazy and kill kids at another camp. That's just not going to work. But this one, by removing the mystery element of it, because even all of our MacGuffins are killed off. Even weird old Ralph is killed off.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of, pretty early in the film.
Yeah, it's kind of mean, but I kind of like it at the same time. So.
Well, they were doing the we're not going to give you a break. There's the beginning of this movie starts out like Halloween. It's more like Halloween.
Yeah.
With someone in a house getting stalked by a killer.
It also has references to Psycho in it. You know, obviously she mm-hmm. gets in the shower and then you see her, you know, throw the curtain open really quick. So they're trying to reference horror movies from the past.
Yes,
you know, maybe
they're being
kind of
cheeky. And
yeah.
Well, but you know, at the same time, my note for that is, you know, flashbacks are cheap. And when literally 10 minutes of your film involve mm-hmm. one person on a set and flashbacks, you've just made about an eighth of your film for a couple $100, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one to knock economy in filmmaking, you know, so I'm all for this. But, you know, I just told you, I'm thinking, it's like, wow, this must have been really cheap to make. You know?
Plus, they also had to have some sort of lead-in for how you reconcile what happened at the end of the first one to have it begin this way.
You have the time-honored tradition of offing the one survivor from the previous film at the start of your next film.
Oh, yeah.
That's a time-honored tradition still going on today.
Yes.
Well, when you see that, especially...
I'm looking at you, Mortal Kombat Annihilation Johnny Cage.
I was thinking more Hostile Part 2, but yes, Johnny Cage works as well.
I was thinking, you know, the Scream movies, you know, how that, you know, that was pretty much a direct ripoff of the Friday the 13th movies. You know, well, not really a direct ripoff, but, you know, it was deconstructing them. And, you know, this is where the deconstruction, you know, begins. This is where they get all the stuff that they can say, well, point to this and Scream, and this is what happens here, and this is what you can look for. I mean, it's starting right here. So we're getting horror movies, American horror movies, basically their beginning of the tropes of them right here.
And, also, this movie has a lot of little references to other movies in it, too, which was not a big deal back then, but, you know... It has become a big deal now. Everything's referential, but this has like a skinny dipping scene that's right out of Bay of Blood. Yep. When she's in the water, it's got a bass. The music's got a bass line right out of Jaws.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he wields the butcher knife when he kills what's her name, the mousy girl, and that's, you know, holding up the butcher knife. I mean, that's a straight direct reference to Halloween right there.
Right, and I think the beginning is like Halloween too. I think he was tweaking. John Carpenter, you know, going, okay, this is the other slasher movie franchise going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, and again, going back to Bay of Blood, the scene where, and we saw this also in the first Friday the 13th, you know, the two people in bed, you know, post-coital this time, you know,
right.
Get a spear through them.
Yes, yep. You're right.
Yep. Not the first time they'll use that gag in the series. Last True. Time, I should say.
Last, yeah.
Speaking of that, this one had a lot of nudity in it compared to the first movie, which did it have any nudity at all in it?
Yeah, there's a little bit.
That's right, just a little bit of side booby stuff. But this one had... This
Kevin Bacon was getting laid pretty good in the first one.
Yeah, that's true.
Getting laid pretty good, I love it.
But this
wanted Bacon's bacon.
Well, this one, like, the characters in this one were even more broader strokes than the other ones, and they were less nice and polite and innocent. They were not that they weren't, like, nice people or whatever, but they were a little more, they were definitely partying a lot more, and they were definitely taking their clothes off.
Oh, yeah, well, they weren't people that you wanted to see off. They weren't people that you hated. I mean, there were some redeeming facts when the characters get caught by the police and, you know, they're brought to the camp counselor and said, you know, you need to take care of these people, make sure they're not found on this, you know, Camp Crystal Lake because we've had problems there before. They are actually apologetic for going over there. Mm-hmm. So they're not really characters that you want to see die,
yeah.
But they do a lot of the things that, you know, in that are tropes of these movies that, you know, lead them to a demise or lead them to be murdered by the killer. So, you know, they're smoking pot, they're engaging in premarital sex. Yeah. So they're doing all the things that are going to get them offed by this crazed lunatic killer.
I remember the big outrage of this movie was that the guy in the wheelchair got killed.
Oh my gosh, killed in the face is what we call that.
And I gotta say that they trotted that scene out on TV all the time to talk about how awful this movie was.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best scenes in the movie. The look on his face is priceless.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest here. If there's a crazed homicidal person or zombies or any other creature, if you can't run, you're fucked.
It's good to it's good. Yeah, it's just like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it's good to know that these killers are
equal opportunity.
They'll kill anybody. Yeah, they don't care. They're equal opportunity.
Well, and one of the weird things about having the guy in the wheelchair is this has got to be way before the ADA would mandate that you have to have, like, wheelchair accessible areas.
Yeah.
And, you know, your camp has to be plotted out
what
so it's not.
What the fuck is he doing at a summer camp in the woods?
He's in training.
That porch that he's on has, like, 8 steps up to it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Unless somebody helps him out, he's not going anywhere.
Just down.
Going down pretty fast. Actually, even there being a dude in the wheelchair, all that made me think of was Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he gets kind of killed in the same way and rolls on down the hill.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's if you got somebody in a wheelchair who's going to die, you got to roll them down something. What was the other movie? Manhunter. Was it Manhunter? Yeah, Manhunter.
Yeah, Freddie Louds goes screaming down.
If you could launch him off of end of it, that's even better. I mean, even the way Jason looks, and this is a look obviously they would never return to.
You mean the half toxic Avenger, half Jack Black look?
Well, actually, he's got the burlap sap is to at least I look at that's a direct reference to the town that dreaded sundown. You know, but I mean, again, that the look with the overalls and the kind of redneck hillbilly look with the burlap sack and with just the one eye peering out would never appear again. It's a little joke in Freddy vs. Jason. So it's not nearly as iconic as the hockey mask, but I really like it. I think Jason Voorhees handled wonderfully in this film. I think the fact that he is clearly just this, you know, crazed loner.
He's just a big Bubba. Yeah, he's not a supernatural entity, really.
The part grabs the chainsaw and wields it at him, and he cowers away from it. You know, later in this series, Jason would have walked right at it.
He would have just. He would also been about 2 feet taller. And, you know, this guy. If you engage him, if you start wrestling around with him, you have a pretty good chance. The only time he gets people is when they're hanging upside down by a rope or he comes up behind them, you know, and gets them by surprise.
Yep.
Yeah, he has not achieved the mythic status yet.
Even, you know, kind of the things where he's able to move faster than the other characters, it makes sense in this film because this is where he's lived his entire life is in the woods. So he knows all the shortcuts, and these people who have just gotten here, they don't know where they're going. They're just running. Woods.
They run a straight line on the road or whatever,
so he knows where everything goes. So and again, the other one I really like is when Ginny is under the bed and she pees herself, which I think is a great touch, a great kind of humanistic touch. But then he's on top of the chair and the chair collapses as he tries to kill her. And again, this is just some you know, crazy.
He's like a toned down
he's like Leatherface. He's a lot like Leatherface in that he's inarticulate, but he's still just a guy, you know?
Yeah.
Or I was going to say Michael Myers in the first Halloween, too. He's not as supernatural as Michael Myers, but you could, you know, he can fall down and get knocked over and you can get past him, you know?
Yeah. And you can put on his mother's sweater and fend him off.
Make him tip his head like a dog when you talk to it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we were talking before we started recording.
That's actually a Halloween.
A little bit of...
That's Halloween.
Yeah, that's there. Probably close.
Side, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like unconsciously or not, like Chris and I were saying before we started recording, is they do a little bit of world building here. As cheesy as that sounds, for as cheesy as this franchise is, you know you kind of have to grasp it. It's something to even make this sequel even somewhat logical. I mean, there's just no way you can reconcile. What actually happened if Jason did drown, then he's not around. There's no reason for Mrs. Voorhees to be doing what she did in the first one. So, you know, you just kind of have to roll with it. I guess they do a pretty good job of that, and, you know, at least making you interested.
Well, when it comes right down to it, it's a campfire story, just like at the beginning of the movie, you know. It's, and what I found the most enjoyable thing about this movie was just the watching it reminded me of being at a drive-in. You know, it's the subject matter and stuff. There are people at camp, and it's just sort of carefree people at camp getting killed. And it would be like a movie that people would go to for recreation, you know, to as almost a social event. You know, you go to the drive-in to see the new Friday the 13th,
exactly.
See all your friends and stuff, and watch the people get killed on screen.
Yeah.
And naked, hopefully.
In college, we always call these party movies. It's like, oh, dude, I got the Friday the 13th box. Come on, we're watching Friday the 13th part 2, and you get 8 guys over and a case of beer. You know,
you don't have to pay attention too much.
Yeah, you don't have to. Too much, because you know when shit's about to go down.
Yeah, and the feel of this movie, it feels like a drive-in movie. So that I enjoyed it on. I enjoyed that level of it. You know, I mean, as far as story goes, it has nothing. It's just
they
had a lot more counselors than the last movie, but they just shipped a lot of them off at one point.
Yeah,
and then here's what really mystified me is Goofy Guy.
Yeah, Goofy Guy survives.
He doesn't. He survives. He doesn't even come back. He survives because I thought, all right, they are setting this up perfect. I thought Goofy Guy was gonna like come in through a door and somebody was gonna stab him, thinking he was Jason, or you know, because Goofy Guy always buys it like 3/4 of the way through any of these movies.
Oh, wait till the next one.
The one thing you mentioned about the counselors is this time out, yeah, they did have a lot more of them, but did you notice how they also tried to be as ethnically diverse as they possibly could be? Because there was, I hate to say it, there was a lot of token characters in there. There was, you know, most of the counselors were the pretty, you know, blonde white people.
Those are the people who became the main characters.
The main characters, but they were also the ones that got offed. You know, there was a black counselor on there who
he was there long enough to say something slightly black and go away forever.
There was a young Asian girl as well. She got away. So, you know, I guess in the second Friday the 13th movie, if you're the token minority character, you actually have a better chance of surviving than most of the other people. So that's kind of odd, because usually you think about it, it's, you know, who's going to die? Oh, it's going to be the black guy. He's going to die. So.
Oh, it's the black guy.
No, I absolutely hate the movie Scream 3, but there's a great bit in there where the one black guy in the cast of the movie within the movie says, I've seen this. The black guy dies first, and he leaves and doesn't come back.
Brilliant.
Stole touch it of realism.
Friday the 13th part 2.
Yes. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot, and again, it's kind of the genesis of the F-13 formula here, in that we've got all these extraneous characters and who don't really factor into the story. They go out at night and they never end up coming back, and they don't involve in the ending.
Yeah, so just background.
For the next film, all that's cut. Okay, it's like we're slowly but surely molding this into what the franchise is. It's like, okay, we got the setting and we got the violence from the first one. Okay, now let's do this type of story instead. It's like, okay, well, what didn't work? Well, all these extra characters didn't really add anything. Okay, cut them out. We don't need to pay actors to play nobodies.
Right.
What's going to work next? Okay, so it's becoming like a well-oiled machine at this point, and you can really see the gears start to mesh in this installment.
Yeah, you can see it start to mesh, but it's weird how, in some ways, the next one does kind of take a step back, and we'll get to that when we hit part 3, because, boy.
Theory is perfect, but...
theory is perfect. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Hero.
I was going to say, what I want to bring up at this point, if you're following along with us, is, so now we've seen Jason not as a drowned, hydrocephalic child. We have seen him as a grown Bubba. As Mr. Honeywell so eloquently put it, looking like tarted up Jack Black. Sorry, people get offended.
Totally
I'm sorry.
Does.
Take a look at
if that isn't an oxymoron.
Yeah. Oh, be nice. When we stop watching how his look is completely different when he's unmasked in every film, because let's be honest here, continuity was not on Paramount's mind or the filmmakers' minds when they did these movies.
I kept his boots fairly consistent.
Well,
the looks for Jason unmasked have become kind of the, you know, really standard look for the character, you know, especially his face from 4. That's what most people think of when
and that's him. Yeah. But and that's kind of close to.
Yeah. But I really liked he looks here, where he really looks like just some bubba living in the woods, you know?
Yeah.
As sort of almost a Hills Have Eyes sort of quality to it.
Yeah.
You know? And I like that.
He has a house.
I love the shack. The shack is great. I love what when they reference that in Freddy vs. Jason, they reference the shack, which is just a great throwback. That's the other one. The other joke is when he's being taunted at the little kid before he gets thrown into the lake. One of the kids puts a bag over his head for a minute. But you know, you're right. There's continuity was never important here. I remember reading a review of the Friday the 13th video game for the Nintendo Entertainment System. And,
oh God! Talk about that.
Well, this was a review. This is when the game came out. This was in Ciné Fantastique magazine. The reviewer said that he loved this because it meant that he never had to watch another Friday the 13th film because, you know, a Friday the 13th film, you need to assemble a cast, get a rudimentary plot, you know, do special effects and shoot it. He goes, here, I can just press reset and have a new film. I'm already up to Friday the 13th, part 27.
Yeah, he's got a point there. I don't recall there being killer bats, rats, and zombies in Mrs. Voorhees' floating head. In the movies, might have made them some of them a little bit better, I guess.
Five, it would have been much improved by having zombies.
Oh, good. 5's got the most deaths though, so it does have that going for it.
You know what? A great bit I love in this is when the sheriff starts chasing Jason through the woods, and the only comment I have is Sheriff Andy Taylor's later years. That's
never draws his gun.
Again, well,
there's. And really, there's better interactions with police officers later on in the series, part 6.
Yeah. Well, what reason does he have to chase this person? He just saw some guy run across the road. You know, it wasn't like he was, you know, committing a crime or anything. Well, jaywalking.
Yeah. He had a mask on.
Well, most cops would have. What most cops in most movies would have done would he would have pulled over and sort of looked into the woods and been like, huh, and driven off. This guy is no, like, spring chicken, and he's not in the best of shape, and he's just jogging through the woods.
He looks like Zap Rousdower if you watch Mystery Science.
Rousdower. Rousdower?
Rousdower. But, yeah, I mean, and one of the things I liked about this one, and again, it's hard to compare it to the first one because you're comparing a sequel to the original, but I thought this film had a lot of creative touches. When Ginny is running from Jason and she's trying to, he's jiggling the door, and then he stops and she reaches to go reach for the doorknob. Then he smashes the pitchfork through the door. You don't expect that. You expect him to jerk or open or punch through it. The pitchfork is a great little creative touch there,
and it never comes back. I think it does in 3, but
the pitchfork is there because they end up using it at the end too. They break it.
Yeah.
Or when she's in the bathroom, she runs into the bathroom and she's trying to hold the doorknob and reach for the window. I really like that too because again, it's something a little creative. Can I hold the door and reach it? No, I can't. I'll make a go for it. Ah! You know.
There's a few little touches. Like, I like the scene where in the woods where the dog splits off and comes up to Jason, and the next shot is hot dogs frying on the grill. that one probably got a good laugh in the drive-in when it first was. That I remember people actually, because I didn't get to see these in the movies when I was a kid. My parents wouldn't let me go to see the R-rated movies at that point. But or maybe I could have by then, but I was snobby about Friday. But the thing people met, not actually by this time I was young enough to where The two things that the kids who did get to see the movies and came back to school Monday and would talk about it, the two things that they remembered the most about this movie, besides the guy getting the machete in the head and rolling down the stairs, was her peeing herself and the hot dogs getting thrown on the grill. Because those made him laugh, and the peeing herself, it's a good touch, you know. It's
humanist, you know. You wouldn't see that. And then, or when Ginny's still running away from him after that, she's running for a car, she stops and hides behind the bushes and hits him right in the nuts.
Yes, a full kick.
Stack of potatoes, you know. It's like, oh.
And then again, this is another great thing that distinguishes this from the movies that come after this, is that yeah, you could take down Jason. You know, you give him a good
fight
kick
back.
It gives it a sense of a greater sense of realism and a greater sense of dread, I think, because you know you're wondering if this person can actually, you know, make it. You know, by the end of, you know, by the time we get to part 5 and 6 and they're on, we're like, no, these people are going to die. But we kind of get the idea that these people might be able to make it out because this person isn't just this supernatural, you know, unstoppable fool.
Yeah, once he gets to that point, it's just like run away from him. That's all he could really do. There's not much.
Yeah, it doesn't even work.
Right.
Yep.
He has magical transportation powers later on.
Yep.
Go ahead.
One thing I liked about the pee scene, too, that was another nice little touch that was a little out of, little deeper, maybe, I don't know if the filmmaker meant it, but when she peed herself, that's what he sort of stopped.
Yeah.
Like he could sense it, like he was either sensing the fear, or he could, like, smell it like a wild animal or something, you know. He wasn't really aware of her until that happened.
Yeah,
and then he sort of tips his head. I thought that was a nice little.
That is, I said, I like that. I just like that whole sequence. I mean, the last half an hour or so of this film just really is just boom, boom, boom. It really doesn't stop. I mean, it's a little slow going at the beginning, as all pretty much all the early F-13s are.
But they throw a lot of boobies in there, and until then,
they keep it in. And then, of course, at the very end when Ginny makes it to the shed. First off, there's a shot I really like. It's really subtle, where she goes in the shed and she's kind of just looking around, and over her shoulder out the window, we can see Jason running at her. I really like that, because first off, I like it from a technical standpoint, because we've got a really nice depth of field that we can clearly see Jason, even though he's very far in the background. I'm doing this with my hand so that you all can see it. Okay? So we see Jason far in the background, and he's very clear because of the depth of field. So I think it's a nice creative shot. But then again, it's also that it reminded me a little bit of, again, the shot from Halloween where we see the shape stalking across the street, you know. But here, Ginny can't even see him coming. We can see him coming as the audience. And it's like, turn around, you idiot. He's right behind you.
Well, at that point, you're also going, no, you're in his house. Because she's like, somebody help me. It's like, no, but he's going to help you here.
And then,
and the, how do we know? And how do we know it's his house?
Yeah,
I saw it on the mailbox. That's how I could tell.
Yeah,
well, that, I mean, it's the little touches, the decorating, the yes. Severed heads.
Yes. I love the girls' bodies, because isn't Alice's body in there? I know that the girl who goes skinny dipping, her body's in there. I think Alice is the other body in there, isn't she? But I just love the yeah. But then the whole bit with Ginny putting on the sweater and using the child psychology, first off, the fact that it's actually foreshadowed properly, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then, but then it's like, again, you know, with a franchise movie like this, you always look for something, at least they were trying. They
yeah.
were trying something creative. It's like, that
it makes
is,
sense.
Yeah, it's a good, thoughtful way to do that. And it's a nice scene.
Yeah, Ginny's smart. She's not an idiot.
It was a drive-in version of Psycho. Sort of yeah. thing, you know, where they were like, let's use a little psychology here. And it's not psychology that might really work in reality, but it made sense in the movie for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
And it doesn't work completely. It gets him off yeah. his game for, you know, a little
long
bit.
Long enough, yeah.
So also gives one of my favorite lines that Betsy Palmer gets in either film that she's in. when Jenny starts saying the line, then Pamela finishes it when she says, "Jason, mother is talking to you." And he kind of cows a little bit at that. I love that, because not only does it really sells the characters of both Pamela and Jason, you know, even though it's not really Pamela, you know. Yeah. But I really, you get a little glimpse into what life in the Voorhees house must have been like.
Yeah, it does give it a little bit of nice backstory for the Voorhees character, that mom was one of these sort of crazed, you know, overprotective moms that, you know, would probably browbeat her son. So that's one of the kind of neat things.
Well, if you're an overprotective mother, why the hell are you bringing him to the edge of a lake when you know he can't swim? Shitty mother.
Well, she said she had a job there.
It's so funny that we're recording this on Mother's Day.
Oh, we are, aren't we? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Any serial killer that loved his mother as much as Jason Voorhees? I remember.
Well, you can love your mother, you just can't love your mother.
Oh, we should have actually done Mother's Day. Isn't there actually a horror movie called Mother's Day?
Yes, there is.
Pretty sure.
We could have done Psycho.
Yeah.
Psycho would have been the ultimate, yeah.
We'll do that next year.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, I remember writing, I wrote an editorial back from my old GeoCities horror site, which was Luke's Vault of Horror back in the day, back in the early 2000s. And I wrote an editorial about why I love Jason Voorhees, and I remember saying that one of the reasons was that Jason doesn't need an excuse to be evil. I go, he's not blaming this on his parents. God knows he loves his mother. You know? I don't, always wanted to picture Jason having a tattoo that said mother on his arm.
Tell you what, when I get the money to remake it, with good continuity, he'll have a tattoo that says mom.
Excellent.
Maybe a brand. Our brand's in now. That's the thing.
Yeah. And you could do mom and brands pretty easy, you know.
Yeah. Who knows?
The ending. The ending tag here. Which, I mean, I'm assuming that Miner wanted to do this just because Cunningham had done the great tag stinger at the end of the first one.
Yes, and this was this version of it. Almost like the same version of it.
I mean, you know, the first one is classic. I think this one works better, though, because it makes more sense in the narrative, you know? Even though it's from three, it's understood that it's supposed to be a dream now, but I like to read it as just taking the film on its own merit, that it's not a dream, and that, you know, he really does smash through that window and grab her, and then Paul ends up getting killed, and the police show up, and everything else, so... Because that was what the original intention was, if you read...
Yeah.
Minor, but man, that just that him, because they tease it, because they take his mask off, his sack off, and Paul says, "Ugh," you know, and shudder. But they don't show it to us, which should be your first tip that they're going to show it.
That the movie's not over yet. Yeah.
but him jumping through that window. I remember the first time I saw that. It was on, I guess it was on TBS back when TBS would show Friday the 13th all the time. This was that they would show much more frequently than one. I guess because Jason was in it. Which is odd, because I had to edit this one more, but that's neither
here nor there. I was just going to say, probably not the gore, that's the funny thing.
Yeah, probably just the boobies.
I have to say, though, the return of Muffins was about one of the lamest. Muffins!
Even if I catch the whole movie, I always try and catch the last 5 minutes knowing that they'd have the bit of him jumping through the window.
I think my favorite scene in the whole thing is where they go to the bar and the band's playing, and the guitar player plays an invisible whammy bar.
Yes!
That was amazing.
I wanted to ask you about that. I'm not a guitarist, but that's...
He was not playing anything close to what... I don't think they were playing the song that was on the soundtrack when whatever he was miming to or playing, they were not related at all. And then what... Except for... There was a bent note there, but you can do that with your fingers if you're a guitar player. But I think visually they just wanted him wow wow. But there's no whammy bar there.
Yeah, I noticed that the band, you know, because I used to play drums, and the drummer in there was doing nothing that sounded like anything that was being played in that music.
No,
so,
right. They
that
just
was completely off and horrible.
Yeah,
you know, we're discussing this when we can't even talk about the fact that continuity is not even an issue. Really?
all I'm going to say is, you have to wonder if the band didn't realize they were going to be filmed in close-up like that. So he's just doing WAWAR just for fun. I didn't realize we were going to be like focused on his hands.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking the band, I'm thinking it's one of those weird situations where if you were sitting there while they were filming it, all you'd hear is a drum beat and like sort of the light twangy noise of strings on electric instruments going that aren't plugged in. And they said, okay, just move around like you're a band. And they would go, wah. But they were real musicians. Like the guitar player was, he was forming chords with one hand, but they were just not, when he would change chords, it would not be when the song was changing chords at all.
The other bit I really liked in the bar, and you guys know I'm a big pinball fan, is that we do see the KISS pinball machine. The only country western bar in the world with the KISS pinball machine. which is obviously a very popular one. Now, the game next to it, I could not recognize, and I had to go online and research this. It was a Topaz Shuffle Alley, which is an old-school bowling arcade game. And it's like, I know I've played a Topaz Shuffle Alley, so it's like just great little flashback to 1980, the KISS pinball machine and a Topaz Shuffle Alley bowling arcade game. It's like, oh, man, I miss games like that.
Love the shuffle bowling games are one of my favorites.
Because I know if I was one of the counselors, I wouldn't have ended up dead because I'd be putting quarters into the KISS machine all night, you know, playing pinball. So it's like, well, where's Luke? Oh, he's alive. He's still playing that damn pinball game.
That also had the great great bit of dialogue in the bar where when Goofy Guy, they're it's like around last call, and he just turns around to this old couple and goes, any after-hour bars or any after-hours places around here? And they go, sure. And then he just turns around and walks away. He doesn't ask him where. He turns around and gives this like weird look like, didn't get the the only logic I got out of that was they were saying, okay, this guy's not done partying, so that's why you're not going to see him. I thought that was just a good way of tucking him away to get killed later, you know? Right. It was just like, oh, all right, so they're saving up some for the end, you know?
That's funny. That is so funny. And I love the whole, you know, he's that guy, the guy that's really flirting with the female bartender.
Yes.
Every bar's got that guy in it. We always said, don't be that guy.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, like, can I take those by? I'm saving my bottles. Is what? Okay.
He was big into recycling. That's probably what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody was big into recycling in, what, 1981?
He was ahead of the game.
And I love the... Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, okay, maybe not.
And I love, I think it's the guy in the wheelchair, I think it's Mark, and the girl that's interested in him, Vicky, their double entendres when they're talking about the video games are just, it's like reading them as like they were chiseled out of stone. It's just so...
Yes.
So like, we'll play for position. Oh!
And then she tipped, yeah.
It's like, we'll play hockey. Which was that? That's the one with the puck, right? It's like, oh,
yeah.
Really?
It might as well have been just like, so does your dick still work? Yes, it does. Okay, good, because I'm interested in it. Okay, yes, good. Might as well just left it at that, you know, because it was basically at that level. Yeah,
there was no subtlety in that dialogue whatsoever.
Now, weren't they arm wrestling in the last movie too? Is there going to be an arm wrestling theme in the Friday the 13th movies or something?
No.
They were playing like Monopoly or something, but
Monopoly in the first one.
Yeah, it was strip Monopoly.
Is there going to be like a whole sitting around playing games and smoking joints thing going on?
Yes, there is more drug use. You can look forward to Crispin Glover awkwardly dancing.
And there's a great bit of trivia that goes with that when we get to that bit.
I forgot Crispin Glover was even associated with that. That's something to look forward to. Anytime I hear that name, I'm
sure he's forgotten he's associated with it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching this. I mean, I remember saying to my wife, "I was like, oh, I gotta watch Friday the 13th Part 2," and I was like, I don't remember that one being all that great. And then it all started coming back when I was watching. It's like, you know, this one's pretty... I mean, this one gets kind of a bum rap. It's like, this one's pretty good. I enjoyed watching this one. enjoyed watching the first one.
Well, it's like Ginny's a good, you know, in terms of the series, a pretty good character.
Yeah.
Female lead. You know, you root for her. You don't want to see her get killed.
And go ahead.
No, I was going to say probably what you're going to say. She's not the token, you know, stereotype blonde who's, you know, out to be the last one there. She's not the virgin, but she's brighter than a lot of the people. So she's a good character to make it through the movie.
She's more like a real person than some of the other.
Oh, definitely.
She's a little bit better of an actress than the acting is not as good in this one. Doesn't have to be.
No,
but
she's cute too.
They're all cute. It's the 80s, but there's still a little 70s hanging around in the fashion, which is fun. The
short shorts. Oh my god.
Well, the 70s, like in the very beginning when they first roll into town, I can't remember that girl's name.
Right. Some of them saw bell bottoms. I don't think.
Well, he was in the bell bottom. He was looking like something right out of a 70s movie. He had the cap and the wife beater on and stuff. But she had the like cut off jeans and the wife beater and no bra and the curly hair. But then you had the 80s thing where it's time for bed. They dress up like Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
Like things with the collar right up to the top of their neck. And, you know, that was a weird thing about the 80s is like bathing suits or like being out in the summer. The girls are dressed really skimpy, but just normal sort of girl wear was like very like conservative looking. It almost looked religious, you know.
We really are on just the beginning cusp of the 80s.
Yes.
Here, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so. 81, you really isn't the 80s yet.
No,
but name.
But you'll notice in the beginning the character from the first movie, she's got the prototypical 80s girl haircut.
Yeah.
That was a haircut my sister had through the whole 80s, basically.
Walled a little bit there. I love that when we see Terry wearing the hot pants and the Mickey Mouse t-shirt. That's an inappropriate combination, but it's perfect.
What are you talking about? That's a great combination. It says, I like cartoons, but I'm here to fuck.
Which is what every nerd wants to hear, yeah.
Yeah, which I need to backtrack for a second. We're talking about the kid in the wheelchair and, you know, the sexual parlay that's going on there. Yes. It makes me wonder what kind of freaky fetish that chick had that she wanted to bang somebody that was in a wheelchair.
Now, maybe she liked him for his personality. Maybe she really just vibed with him, man.
Yeah, real. She really vibed with him. She knew she's like, I'm gonna get on top, and there's nothing he can do about it. Running the show.
I don't understand why they didn't have a scene of them at least making out or sex. I mean, that just would have been fun to film. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been a novel thing to have on in your movie. So
Do you think the ADA would have been pissed if the paraplegic was getting laid? They would have been complaining. This is cruelty to people that can't walk. People that can't walk don't get laid.
It's empowerment.
Oh boy.
I'm a bad person.
Yes you are. Yes you are.
You're a bad, bad hair metal hero.
I'm sorry.
You're not
there
sorry.
There we go.
I'm not sorry. Anything for a laugh.
Anything.
Yeah.
Well, almost anything.
All right, so anybody got any last thoughts before we roll on out of here on Friday 13th Part 2?
Thought is the great thing about this is I never have to, like with the other movies, I have to go, what are we doing next? This one, I just have to do math to figure out what's coming up next. Simple math.
And a certain, I think they pretty much all have a Roman numeral in them.
After them, yeah.
Hell, that's the only one that doesn't, so.
Yeah, they'll get titles eventually, but yeah. Goat
all doesn't have one. That's the only one.
No, it doesn't. But by that point, do we really give a shit? Because the filmmakers clearly didn't.
Steve Miner, we hardly knew you.
Well, I mean, for part three, I haven't watched... I've actually watched part three a long time ago and parts of it recently because I have an Anaglyph 3D copy of it that I found on the internet that... The 3D is horrible on it. But I will take the I will take one for the team, and I will watch this movie in 3D.
Oh, don't watch it in 3D. Watch it without the 3D so you can really help me pick apart the absolutely awful, terrible effects in it.
Well, that's the thing. It was like, we could get to this next month, but it was like Jaws.
Save that for next month, man.
Save it for the stage, boys. Save it for the stage.
If I was really adventuresome, I'd propose that we do Jaws 3D too, the double feature. But no.
In 3D than Jaws 3D. No, not happening.
I like Jaws 3D.
You're a sick, sick man.
I have a special place for it in my heart, but I don't like
it. It's better than 2. Shit.
That's.
My butt. Does that count?
Is that?
Nothing.
I didn't hear what you said. I'm going to actually have to listen to my own show for once.
Yeah.
And by that time, you'll forget that this even happened, so it'll be a nice surprise for you. Nice little Easter egg.
Yes.
All right, so I guess come on back next month and wear your 3D glasses so you can see our podcast in 3 full dimensions right in your face.
It's going to be 3D, so put on your glasses and... It's going to be like a Gallagher concert, so bring a garbage bag.
People in the first 10 rows may get wet.
I don't want to know about that.
Once again,
now, are we watching the same thing? are we going to a Gallagher concert, or are we going to, like, some freaky, squirting show?
And we're done.
You say freaky squirting. I say amazing entertainment.
You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Welcome to Amazon. I love you.
Visit our brand new website at twotruefreaks.com.
Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook too. My name is spelled ScottGardner.
You can friend me on Facebook too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."